after you have sort of gone through this reflection phase, making notes and maybe consulting with friends and close family members or close friends, just develop ideas and then start thinking about anything that you've come across in that sort of contemplation that you'd like to continue with, and having the time now to delve into more deeply, to really get more immersed in. And remember that you really want to cater to your mental needs and your social needs. You want to gain intellectual and mental stimulation from what you're doing, as well as meeting people and enjoying the process. So there's different aspects of your life as a whole human being and holistic approach that you want to cater to and try and meet your needs as a whole person.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors healthcare.
Hi, welcome back to the Retire Well, Retire Happy podcast show. And today my special guest is Stephen Peterson, and he lives in Victoria, Melbourne, currently one of the hotspots for coronavirus in Australia. But he's been very happily retired. He enjoys riding, push bike riding all over his backyard, the wonderful big city of Melbourne, and he's a volunteer. So welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you very much, Anne. It's great to be here, and I really admire this podcast. I think you're doing a great job. Good on you.
Thank you very much. We all love praise, don't we? And we respond very well to it as well.
Well, it's nice to be acknowledged for what you're doing and how you're contributing to life and the community in general.
I first came across Stephen, for those listening, through Instagram. And Stephen's quite avid about getting out and about and seeing his backyard. So maybe that's a good place to start. How long have you been retired? And have you always been a push bike rider, or is that something you've taken up in later life?
Well, I'll answer the second part first. I became a cyclist. I think I got my first bicycle just after I turned 7. And so I've been cycling on and off since then. I've been as an adult cyclist really since my mid to late 20s. Even when I lived overseas in Japan, in fact, during the 1990s, for nearly 9 years, I continued cycling there. So I go out, try to go out at least twice a week. Of course, now here in Melbourne, we have a 5-kilometre limit. So fortunately, I live very close to Albert Park Lake, certainly within the 5 kilometres, and that is actually the venue for the Melbourne Grand Prix. So my cycling now is just going around and around Albert Park Lake, just like the F1 drivers do.
Oh, that's precious. At least you have a park and a beautiful view to take in as you're going around.
Yes, well, it is a lovely spot, but very, very popular now. And so you get people whizzing past, and every now and again I do pass another cyclist. Going back to your previous double question, I did cease paid employment, so I suppose you could call that retiring, in March 2014. So it's 6.5 years now. And really, since that time, my life has just completely changed, which was really, I guess, off my own initiative. I realised it was necessary to really grasp the nettle, as it were, and significantly make changes to my life, and I have done that, and really this has been one of the most enjoyable periods of my life, no question about it.
Well, that's wonderful to hear, because we often hear about people that have been really busy in their work life and they retire and then they are at a bit of a loss. So how did you find that transition period? Were you prepared for retirement?
I think that's a very good question, Anne, of being prepared, and that's something that I really sort of picked up on as an issue for people in that situation. To answer that simply, no, I wasn't prepared, although I realised that I was going to have to do something to fill the time. I actually had about 6 months period leading up to when I was going to stop work, knowing that was when I was going to stop. So I did start looking around a bit, but really it wasn't until I actually had ceased working. And I had been only working part-time for 8 years, 4 days a week. So I already had a reasonable amount of time, but part of that time was taken up by being a fairly active parent. I was actually an older parent. My eldest is 26 and my younger is 23. So I started as a parent well into my 40s. So I was still an active hands-on parent pretty well up until the time I did stop work and a little bit after that. But I really looked around pretty carefully and did a bit of research, and fortunately I was able to find progressively a number of activities that I wanted to become involved in, which did reflect my interests. So it wasn't as though I just grasped at anything. It was activities that I was interested in that I started latching onto and becoming involved in.
When we've been busy and we haven't developed any outside activities outside of work and the family, it is a bit of a challenge when it's just your choice, because probably we haven't given ourselves choices in the past, but now that we can, it's very interesting. But I believe that if you can start practicing before you retire, then you have more of a smoother transition into retirement.
Oh, definitely, yeah. One of the activities that I have done over the past 5 or 6 years is a bit of public speaking. Two topics about Japan, because I lived there for some time and I'm fairly familiar with the country. But the other one was a presentation I developed titled Tackling Retirement. And I actually set up a website about that as well. And what you just mentioned is one of the themes that a lot of people have been through their working life and haven't really had the choice to do things. It's what they've had to do is part of the job, and their life is really structured around the job, what that entails, plus, of course, their family life, both males and females. There's no differentiation. So to step out of that structured environment and to have all that freedom and not have a support staff, you know, maybe a secretary, or you've got, if you're in management, you've got people supporting you, or if you're in a professional role, you've got partners. So you step out of all of that. So you really are on your own, and you're really sort of forced back onto your own resources to figure out how to do it. And really, there are a lot of people who have been very successful professionally in their lives who are floundering when it comes to making a new start and creating structure in their life of their own initiative going forward. It's a really quite a big battle for quite a lot of people who you would really expect to have done it well.
So what time frame would you recommend? Because I'm sure when you first retire, there's that euphoria and that helping around the house, and probably if you have a wife or partner, getting under their feet, so to speak. How long should you start planning before you retire?
Well, there's two aspects to it. There's obviously the financial side, so that's something that's got to start decades earlier from really when you start your working life. You're putting money into super, and super still is one of the best forms of ensuring your financial security all those years later. The other side is your own life, and that encompasses your interests and your social life. And I think at least a decade or so before you're going to retire, you should be contemplating things that you like to do. And some people have been fortunate that they've had a hobby or hobbies all the way through. They might have had to ease off when they're very busy with their work, But if you've got something like that that you can pick up, it might be restoring cars or it might be, you know, knitting or, you know, there's such a vast array of activities that can be actual hobbies. But then there are so many other things that, such as what I've found in the volunteer area, which can be so very satisfying. So it's a matter of, I think, looking at your life, reflecting on who you are, what you like to do, what your interests are, what they've been in the past, and what you'd like to bring into your life when you have the time. And I think certainly some years before your working life is due to come to an end, that is when you've got to be thinking about this sort of thing. And in fact, it needn't be actually just hobbies and interests and activities. It can be still work. I mean, you can continue working, maybe part-time, or you can even set up your own little business, a consultancy or whatever it might be. So it doesn't mean actually necessarily getting out of the workforce at all. And a lot of people just feel that they're not really the person they believe they are unless they're being paid something for what they're spending their time on.
I have a friend in Melbourne and he's had a couple of different volunteering jobs, but their favourite hobby is travel. Well, no one can do that anymore, and maybe not for another year or so. But he volunteers at the airport, so I suppose welcoming international visitors, so I suppose that's maybe on the back burner as well. Yeah. Have you found your volunteer positions yourself, or was there an organisation that was used to place people into volunteering roles? Have you heard of that before?
Yes, I have heard of those organisations, and I did make contact with one of them. I didn't use them at all. I didn't need to, fortunately. But, yes, and I think that is a way to go. But in my case, some of the main ones, for example, one of my roles is as what's called an independent prison visitor, so through the Department of Justice and Regulation here in Melbourne. So I actually visit two prisons, once a month each, and talk to prisoners and officers and so forth and submit a report to the department. So that role I found, it was advertised actually in the Age, the local newspaper here. Others I've found just through word of mouth or being aware of them. I'm, for example, through the Office of Public Advocate, I'm what's called a community visitor, and that involves going into the homes of people who have a cognitive impairment of some kind or physical disability and just sort of monitoring how the homes are being run. Another one that I was aware of was through Vision Australia, reading on the radio. So that's reading to people who are blind or vision impaired. And I also did join U3A. I'm sure you're aware of that, and other listeners would be, University of the Third Age, and I actually have become a tutor in that. So all of those activities, or most of them except the IPV, I was aware of just by what I'd heard from people and my own research. Plus, on top of that, the public speaking. And that was something that I actually actively sought out because I enjoy that sort of thing.
It's marvellous that you have got yourself involved in many things. And I was interested to hear more about Japan. How long did you live there, and what did you get out of there from their way of life, and what do you talk about now?
First of all, I got a wife and two children, so that was probably the main thing, and I set up two little businesses there, one of which I believe is still going. I developed a very strong interest in the country, which I hadn't really had before I became interested in Japan in the mid-80s. And I went there for the first time in 1989. But I became so interested in it, ultimately, within a year or two, I decided, well, you know, I'm going to sort of uproot myself completely and go and live there for a while, which was supposed to be a maximum of a year, but it turned out to be nearly 9 years. It was a wonderful experience. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Obviously, I became immersed in life and culture and just everything that you experience as a person living in Japan, and I enjoy very much talking about it now. And that is one of my, in fact, I've given probably nearly 40 times over the past 4 or 5 years, I've given presentation about everyday life in Japan. And there's so much to it, which I think most people, even if you've been to Japan, most people don't appreciate, what's going on beneath the surface there.
I've never been, but I've been inspired by listening to people that have been there, and especially people that have lived there, because when you're a tourist, you don't always get to meet the people. And I think it's marvellous that you can live there for a time and see it from their point of view.
Mm. I totally agree. Just as a little anecdote about that, I received an English language newspaper when I was living there because I just wanted to keep up with the news that way. I wasn't on the internet at that time. And one of the common themes in letters to the editor was expatriates, Americans, Canadians, Brits or whatever, Aussies, living there. And they'd write a letter sort of commenting on or complaining about some aspect of Japanese life, saying, well, why do they do things this way here in Japan? Why don't they do it the way we do it back in the States or, Canada or whatever? And I felt the same way, the first year or so. I thought, well, gee, this is ridiculous. Our way of doing it is so much better. But after you've been there a period of time, a year or so plus, you start to realise why things are done that way. And also you realise that, well, this culture has been going on for literally thousands of years and there's a lot of people squashed into a small area. Things have to be done in a certain way so that everyone can get on with it, each other quite okay. And really, ultimately, it boils down to, well, virtually all of those things are rational and reasonable and logical. And so you can always tell people who live there only a short time finding those faults, but people, once they've been there longer, they can understand and they realise, well, it's probably quite a reasonable and good way of doing it after all.
Hmm. It's interesting when you've come from Australia or even the US, where we're in countries that have been colonised by our European ancestors, and it's not until you go to a country like Japan that has a very long history and you realise that you don't have much of a history at all. If I look at my history, I've got four different backgrounds: Irish, Welsh, English and Dutch, I think it is, Dutch German. But through the intermarriage of the white races here in Australia, we've lost any identification with any particular background. So we've lost all that, and we don't appreciate, I think, people that have got that history.
That's right. And the history of people, like the family histories of people in Japan, is totally different from us with, as you've described, a European background. And, that has a lot of significance culturally. Like, for example, Japan didn't go through the prudish Queen Victorian era. Not that I've got anything against Queen Victoria. She was a wonderful queen and it was a very technologically advanced era. But, socially, it was a somewhat prudish period. Well, Japan didn't have that. So, that aspect of attitude to the male and female body, for example, just doesn't exist in Japan or hasn't until perhaps it's been more westernised. So there's so many aspects of a country like Japan and China and others, no doubt, that you cannot take for granted because they don't have the European background that we've grown up with and been totally used to.
Mm. It's good that you are able to enrich yourself through having lived in another country, and it's not an opportunity that we all get. So getting back to retirement issues, how are you connecting with people in that space professionally now that you've retired? I believe you have some websites that you use. What have you been doing as far as your writing hobby goes?
Well, thank you for asking. I've set up three websites, actually. The first one was to house a very lengthy kind of semi-autobiographical novel that I wrote over a number of years, but I finished it about 6 or 7 years ago, and that's just been sitting there on that website unpublished, doing nothing and going nowhere, but that's another matter. And then I did something, I set up a website about Japan. That's called Japan BNL, which stands for businessandliving.com. And I put a lot of articles on that. I seldom do anything with that site at the moment also. And then the third one I set up more recently, which is called retireelifestyles.com.au. And on that I've put numerous comments, I suppose blogs you might call them, and short stories pertaining to the boomer generation, baby boomers, and the sort of the over 50s cohort. So I from time to time I do post articles on those websites. But in fact, with another area of work I'm now doing, which is as what's called a community representative. So this is on numerous health groups, some through the state government here in Victoria and others elsewhere. I'm a community representative, so I'm a person who's had experience of visiting in the aged care sector, so I can speak from some experience on that area. And so I'm doing actually quite a lot of writing about the lives and conditions of the elderly throughout Victoria primarily, but Australia more broadly. Really, it's like policy documents and various other kinds of documents that I'm contributing to and assisting in the editing of and the publication of those documents. So my writing has sort of gone from purely pleasure, including Instagram, to more sort of policy development now.
Wow. It sounds like you've given yourself a full life in retirement. And what advice would you like to give before we finish up to people looking at retirement or even to people that have retired but are floundering?
Yeah, it's never too late. Look, I come across a lot of people who really their lives revolve around their spouse and often around travel. And I personally, I think that's nowhere near enough. So I would say to before you know you're going to be stopping work, really reflect on your life. Just think about what you've enjoyed, both in your work but also in your private life. And go back, right back to your 20s, even your teens, and just contemplate what you'd like to do. And after you have sort of gone through this reflection phase, making notes and maybe consulting with friends and close family members or close friends, just develop ideas and then start thinking about anything that you come across in that sort of contemplation that you'd like to continue with and to having the time now to delve into more deeply, to really get more immersed in. And remember that you really want to cater to your mental needs and your social needs. You want to gain intellectual and mental stimulation from what you're doing, as well as meeting people and enjoying the process. So there's different aspects of your life as a whole human being and holistic approach that you want to cater to and try and meet your needs as a whole person.
Thank you very much for being on the Retire While Retire Happy show. And if any listener may want to get in touch with you, what would be the best way to do that?
Well, I'm happy to receive an email. You've got my address, so I'm happy to receive an email. It's my full name at iprimus.com.au. So I'm happy to engage in a conversation with anyone who'd like to chat about it. And if I can assist anyone in their pathway to a successful and happy retirement, I'd be delighted to be able to do so. And, of course, talking about Japan, if anyone wants to do that.
Thank you very much. It's marvellous what you can get involved in, and you can't be limited by what you used to do. But it's great, and I truly admire the full life that you've created for yourself in retirement.
Thank you very much, Anne. And look, it's mutual. I really admire what you've done. I think we met through Instagram. You're active on that, which is uncommon in our age group. I'm sure you'll agree. And what you're doing with this podcast is great work. You're really contributing. So all the best to you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.